Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
It's showtime.
Birdman Hand Rub, welcome back to another episode of Showtime. Yes, sir. I'm your host, Jason Madison, as always joined by my co-host, Bethany Anderson, Anthony Mays, and Gabby Top Secret Phillips.
confidential.
So I want to ask you guys, based off our earlier conversation, do you guys have a favorite conspiracy theory?
A favorite? Shit.
Yeah, I'll tell you mine just to start it off.
Okay.
Mine is that Stanley Kubrick filmed the moon landing, the fake moon landing. That
good one.
We see.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes, good one.
We're going to keep it connected to, you know, TV and movies like we talked about. Yep. It's on brand.
Uh-huh. That's right.
I mean, technically over at Basketball Illuminati, I'm supposed to be getting my PhD in conspiracy theories, basketball related especially. So I got plenty of those. But and then this one, it's not even a conspiracy anymore because they straight up just announced that it's real. But aliens, like aliens are real, guys. UFO are real.
Yeah.
All right, Gabby, what's yours?
It has to be the Dr. Sebi, Bill Cosby, Nick Cannon, and any black person, black man that dies was going to buy NBC. Those are my favorites. Those are my favorites. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's like, as soon as something happens, it's like, I bet he's going to buy NBC. I love it.
Please say that about me when I die, guys. Like, whatever happens, whatever happens to me, just say.
It's like, he died in his sleep, but he was about to buy NBC. Natural causes. I think my favorite is that Michael Jordan retired because he was gambling on the NBA.
NBA games. Yeah, I like that. That's a very fun conspiracy theory.
Okay, yeah. Mike, spicy. You can play baseball. We'll let you play baseball.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Bet on those 162 games. See how you do.
Woo!
See how that worked out for Pete Rose.
Right. Before we get into it, I was also thinking when Gabby, you were telling me or telling us about the top secret and being compromised. Have you guys seen the new Mission Impossible trailer?
Dude.
No, I haven't.
No.
Yeah. Nah.
Tom Cruise, man.
Now, Jason, you know you're supposed to drop it in the group chat. Come on now.
I know. That was my bad. That was my bad. I, you know what? I figure everybody watches all things Tom Cruise. We're all part of the Church of Scientology. No, not really. But that's how ill Tom Cruise is. Like, he's made so many great movies. He made his own church, and people actually go there.
No, I haven't seen the trailer for the new Mission Impossible. I've been following the Maverick. I'm really ready for Top Gun.
This episode is out. Top Gun is out.
Oh yeah. I'm going this weekend. I'm going like my daughter's gonna be home and I'm just gonna walk out and just be like, where are you going? I'm like, to the movies. Have a good afternoon with your grandmother because I'm out.
you're gonna pull a van. Okay.
I am most definitely gonna pull a van.
Terrera.
Yo, okay. We have to get into this episode of Atlanta because we do. Okay,
we must. It's very important for us to talk about this week's Atlanta.
Yes.
That's another meaning.
Right. Bon appetit.
So, okay, this episode starts off, and of course, I immediately think about you, Jason. We have three black women sitting at a cafe in Paris. So before we, jump into it, I want to know, how did you feel about this episode and how they represented black women, Jason? Because I know that's been, a huge concern.
Look at Jason's hands right now. He has his hands clasped very tightly in front of his face like this. It's very dramatic. Jason, what do you think?
I definitely feel like Dr. Umar on steroids while I'm watching the show.
Oh, my God.
Because I just feel like the way our black queens are depicted, he would not be, very receptive to any of these depictions. Peeing on white men, being in possession of meth and, throwing that on white men's beds and watching them get naked and eating black people's hands. None of that would be under the, Prince of Pan-Africanism. He would not approve.
I beg your pardon.
any of those activities. Yeah, please cue in all the Dr. Umar phrases in that segment right there.
Look, we had three black women. We had Candace, who got flued out to pee for $6,000. We had Shanice and we had Zosia. Zosia, the actress who plays Zosia, is actually Lakeith Stanfield's a girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, but they have a child together.
I think they're still a thing.
And her real name is Zosia?
Zosia.
Now let me ask y'all, is $6,000 enough to get flown to Paris and pee on somebody?
If the expenses are included, le ticket pour le plane, oui, oui, je ferai ça.
Okay, let me just add a secondary part to that. Because I felt when I watched the show, it reminded me of the stories I hear about girls in Dubai. You know?
Exactement.
Right.
So listen, my boyfriend and I literally had this conversation. I promise you, if somebody right now was like, I will pay you $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 to defecate and or piss on me the way I'm hopping my ass on a flight, I'm eating all the Taco Bell I can find.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna do like her. I'm gonna drink me not Gatorade. No, that's for amateurs. I'm gonna drink some liquid IV, some drip drop, the things that keep me properly hydrated. And the way, sorry listeners, but the way I will piss for $6,000. You understand? That's $6,000 I did not have the day before.
Okay.
For
okay.
Something you were going to do already? You have right. To go to the bathroom?
I was going to have to do this anyway. So if you trying to just Parfait. Be, you know, a human porta potty, run me my money, and right. Then I'm going to go back home. I got, yeah, look. You know...
I'm just saying, like...
Inflation is high, Jason.
I feel you, but... Again, the way the Dubai stories are kind of told, it's like there's an air of fear, you know, amongst this situation. It's almost like, you know, old girl from what's the Players Club? You know, I just came here to strip, and it's like, you know, it, like there's kind of like that air of these agreements. I feel like to it, you know, obviously in this show they played it like much neater, and there was no. Threat of danger, you know, ever looming in that part of the story. But I'm just saying, like, being offered that, I would kind of have at least some second thought about, I guess maybe France is different from the Dubai and all of
but
the
look,
rules and regulations.
There's people who just have these kinks, and they're not putting anyone in danger. It's a consensual agreement.
Right.
You know what I
right.
mean?
Right.
But what I hear about Dubai is that the women are getting paid to actually be messed on,
right,
and not right. the other way around.
Right. Okay, so it's a different,
yeah, right? It's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's huge difference.
As Trump would say, a huge difference. Okay,
right.
Man, but yeah, there was still not a great redeemable black female character like in the episode. I mean, I guess
what?
Well, the lady that played
Zosha got her line off.
The lady that played the voice of reason, the skinnier
Candace.
Friend. I mean, yeah, Candace. Not her. She was the one that was
Zosha. Zosha. Yeah, Zosha and Shanice.
Right, because it's like you got one girl that ends up peeing on the dude, one girl that flew out there to pee on the dude. Then you got Van. It's like, are any of these the you know, Toni Morrison? I don't know.
Or Jason was Van kind of a placeholder for the whole idea about the fact that black women get left out. I mean, we can go there. So all of the main shows, mm-hmm. Van kind of is in a supporting role. But right. like, I look at all of the anthology episodes of this season, right? They were all male focused. It was all about how men were affected, right? You think about Three Slaps. You had the little boy who was centered. That's male. You had the reparations one, right? That was about a white man and his... how he was affected by it. And then you had Trinity to the Bone, which you might think, okay, Sylvia's the main character, but really it was about the little boy and the husband. And so Bash, there's that. Yeah. And then you had Ash, and then you had Rich Wigger, Poe Wigger.
Right.
Or Poe Wigger, Rich Wigger. I don't know which way it went.
Yeah. No,
but that was also male focused. So I think that this was not that bad.
No. Listen, I listen here. I'm making criticisms about the larger like depiction of black women, not the episode as a piece of entertainment and like in the story of the show. And that is part of another rant I have to go on later in regards to a comment.
Oh,
we
he's
about
making
show.
Appointments for more rants in the future. Okay.
But the show was good, and I love the fact that we got a Van episode, and that we on this podcast predicted the Van episode coming.
Right.
So, you know, I was happy that it came. What they showed us was entertaining as fuck. All of the running around that she did and everything that took place in the episode was entertaining. I loved it. Alexander Skarsgård popping up was great. We were trying to, it was the classic Atlanta episode. What is real? What is fake? What am I supposed to be believing? What am I not? They're throwing all this, you know, the classics at us. And then they give us the great post-credit scene that was interesting. That wrapped up another thing that we talked about and predicted. So, yeah, I don't want to come off like I'm super critical of the episode. I actually really enjoyed it and thought it was a great way to end the season.
I get that. But I'm talking about the black women in particular, because I honestly felt like these women, I feel like I know women like this. Like, they're in another country. They want to have some cool, fun experiences, and they're just going with the flow. Where sometimes we can't be depicted as, like, stuck up, and we're not open to new things. And right. You know what I mean? I really enjoyed, like, how Shanice and Zosha were like, Let's turn up. Let's do something fun. And when they went to the party and the lady asked them to stay, they're like, yeah, let's stay. Like, we want to do something fun. They invited us to be here. And even when they're at the dinner table, they're like, oh, we're putting these napkins over our head. Cool. Let's do it. This is some kind of fancy shit.
I loved that.
Their attitudes about everything. I love how they just were down for adventure.
I wrote down mopeds. I wrote down the mopeds. Zipping around in Vespas. In Italy, it just reminds me of the time I went to Key West on my own, and I got on one of those things, drunk as hell, and crashed all over Key West.
Now, wait a minute.
And had an amazing time. Oh, my God. I had an amazing time. If you don't know,
Key West, all over.
All over that place. Key West has phenomenal, like, happy hours.
We have many things to talk about, but first I want to say that it was ridiculous to see Zazie Beetz trying to be Amelie on an acid trip. I am pretty glad that they shouted it out at the end. They said, oh, I saw Amelie, and it was une fine très bien, and I want to be like her. But c'est complètement ridicule. It was a crazy episode, guys.
Yeah, it was a lot.
I was thinking about you when I was watching this, Maze, because remember last week we talked about you wasn't sure how there was going to be a resolution. Did you feel
there was not.
Resolved?
How about not?
there was no resolution.
Yeah, fuck your resolution.
Like, they tied up the van thing, which I thought was really well done. And like you said, Jason, it was totally surreal, right? Like, she's only been doing this for a week, but she's living the life of a French person who's been there forever.
No, yeah, she's in a magazine. She has a full-fledged relationship.
Right.
She walks up to another guy who's super familiar with her. Hey, you usually call or whatever the fuck he said. And so it was like, we're supposed to believe she's got the baguette that's been in her purse for
baguette.
6 months.
Okay, so, I need me a baguette.
But she couldn't have been there any longer than 60 days. And so it was just...
Exactly. So they fucked with time on that. Yeah. And I'm all for it. You know, like, it kind of reminds... There's actually this episode of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel where they're in France for a little while. And the dad is so in his element. Like, he's down at the cafe talking with three elite intellectual European dudes about politics, and it's just like he's been there. It's like, I love that thing of just like, I'm fully enmeshed with the environment, and this is where I'm supposed to be. So I don't mind all that, but the Skarsgård. Can we talk about Skarsgård? This dude is living his best life.
Yeah,
he was just killing it in Succession. He was amazing. He has the Northman out right now where he got super jacked and just killed dudes for hours. That's all he did. And now he's just showing up as an unhinged version of himself, like it's an episode of Entourage, and he strips down to his animal print man thong and is trying to have a foursome.
Trying, like,
they were all down.
They were all with it. There was
not. And I'm not mad at it, because the only answer you can get is no. It's yes or no, so I'm not mad at the attempt.
I loved when he asked them again, like, you guys don't want me to just take my clothes off? You want to take your clothes off? Like, just.
And again, the black girls were like, I'd be down for that.
Yeah, they're like,
right.
Okay.
They were like, hey, why not? Yeah. We out here.
And then she spits in his face and he furiously masturbates. It was so good.
That was great.
That was perfect. I think he, I think in a pretty loaded year of cameos, I think he stole it. Like he came in and just absolutely threw it down in this episode.
Yeah, whatever Liam Neeson thought he had going, he trumped that like all the way.
So was he better than Kevin Samuels?
Yes. No,
I don't think so. I don't think so personally.
Better than Chet Hanks. Better than Kevin Samuels.
Yeah, so the Kevin Samuels for me was kind of spoiled because of Twitter. Because I didn't see the episode until after it aired. So I was like, okay. But the fact that I stayed off of Twitter, I was so busy that him popping up was just that, oh my God. And because people like Alexander Skarsgård are like so fine that you typically don't get to see them put into these ridiculous comedic roles. It kind of is like, it's kind of like Jon Hamm. Right, like John Hamm and Mad
Big
Men.
John Hamm energy.
Yeah, it's
like
really,
in 30 Rock.
Yes, so it's like when you get to see like these kind of. I mean, there were some moments in True Blood where there was some comedy, but it really wasn't his character driven. So to see him kind of in this role, a little self deprecating role of the celebrity who doesn't get to take himself so seriously. I loved it. It was so good.
He was like, Ashanti. He was like, is she still with Nelly, by the way?
Yeah. He was like, I love this song. What was he listening to? Rock With You?
Yeah.
On repeat over and over again.
I've been listening to the song all day.
Yeah. No, I did fuck with that. But I do feel like the only, just from an acting perspective, like I feel like every kind of big actor has that in their bag. Like the, I'm going to play a weird version of myself off kilter, you know, like this, you know, kind of Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder weird, like I can ham it up to things. So it's like, it wasn't that surprising to me. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's like a 99 on the enjoyment level. But I fucked with the Kevin Samuels role for what it was, obviously partially because he passed and partially because I didn't know that he could act. Like, so the surprise factor and the fact that he got that off in that nice window, and I thought that was still the best episode of the season for me. Like, I have to give him like the crown. I mean, him walking, I don't even think we talked about it, but him walking up to the black kid who got shot and saying that's the blackest thing you could do, and then giving him the school check, like was great. In his robe, it was like the perfect, I got on my bed and my robe for this, like, you know, like moment. So he
sent
really
him to the good hospital.
Exactly, he really delivered.
So here's the deal. Usually when I do these ad reads, I've never really tried the product until they became sponsors, and then they give us samples and I try them and then I endorse them. I'm not trying to make it seem like it's fake. It's real. I've tried them and I like them, but it's not like I've ever used these things before they became sponsors. Today's a little different. Credit Karma. I'm telling you right now, I've used Credit Karma to fix my credit, to figure out what the problematic things on my credit report was, to pay those things off, to get a loan in order to pay off some of those things, to apply for credit cards, to get credit cards I'll qualify for, to take care of them the right way, and then to make sure I level up. Credit Karma uses your credit data to find loan offers that are personalized to you so you can have a better idea of what loan amount you can get approved for. Credit Karma will even show your chances of approval so you can choose between loan offers that you're more likely to get approved for and apply with more confidence. I've done this, ladies and gentlemen, and it absolutely works. Comparing loan offers on Credit Karma is 100% free, and best of all, it won't affect your credit scores and can save you money. Credit Karma, apply with more confidence today. I am talking to you as someone who has fixed his credit using Credit Karma before they ever paid me to do this stuff right now. That's right. Ready to apply? Head to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Go to creditkarma.com/loan offers to find the loan for you. That's creditkarma.com/loan offers.
But yeah, this was a crazy fucking episode, Maze. You're right. It was fucking crazy.
Wait, before we move on to talk about this episode, we have to revisit some of the remarks that we discussed last episode. Ooh. Okay.
Ooh. I need some more mezcal.
Pour it up.
I don't know. Is it going to be Sacrificio or Casamigo? I think it'll be Casamigo's mezcal.
Casamigo's has a mezcal? Oh, holy gosh. Shit.
Let me do the YouTube present. Yes, it's Casamigo's.
Right now she's showing us the dark skin bottle.
Yes. It's quite opaque. It is not exotic presenting. It's quite dark.
Oh, so, shit.
So I just want to make a comment about that really quickly.
Can you give our listeners some context before you go in?
Okay, so I'm thankful we have listeners. You know, I'm thankful that people actually tune into this show and listen to what we have to say. That makes me happy. That makes me excited. It makes me want to keep doing the show. And I'm glad people have a response to it. And so somebody commented on some things that we said last episode. One of them being us comparing Kendrick Lamar and Donald Glover. And so I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, if I can't share an opinion or compare artists, then I don't want to talk to anybody. You know, like I feel like most of conversation is about bullshit like that. And most entertaining conversation or what I want to talk to people about on a podcast or listen to a podcast is about, do you like KD or LeBron? Do you like this person or that person? Do you like this movie or that album? Like, that's what I want to do. If you want to listen to something else, go listen to Murder Podcast or something else. Like, but that, on here, we're going to talk about entertainment. That's what we do, you know, and I'm not like some fanboy either. Like, I'm from Los Angeles. I went to film school. I made videos with artists. I've done all of this shit. I'm not just some random guy on the internet talking about shit that I have no fucking clue about. Like, this is actually what I do for a living, for real. So okay. I feel like I should be allowed the grace to talk about things that I'm into and spend my life doing, you know? So yeah, in terms of that, I'm going to compare Kendrick Lamar and Donald Glover. They're both geniuses. They can both be geniuses. And we can still ask you, who do you like, Jay-Z or Nas? You know what I'm saying? It's nothing wrong with liking two people and somebody having a preference for something else. So that's that. in terms of everything else, you know, I'm going to let Gabby speak for herself, but people have opinions. Like, let people have opinions. We're Black people. We're talking about Blackness. We can have opinions and thoughts the same way you would talk to somebody at your auntie's house or anywhere else. These are the conversations that people always have, and there's always going to be dissenting opinions. The whole point of having conversation is to hear what somebody else has to say, take that in. Okay, you don't like it, then you can feel how you want to feel. But that person has their own experiences and they arrive to their own conclusion. They're not saying it with malice or trying to be harmful to people. Let them get it off. That's all I got to say.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So, Gabby, I'm going to give you the floor to, you know, this listener had something to say about the comments made about Kendrick Lamar's wife. You, I guess, use a term that she's exotic presenting, that she is not a Black woman.
Not sure if I said she wasn't Black. I think that statement, actually, I'm positive. Let me not say I think when I know. That statement came from me not knowing, right? And so I'm saying she's exotic presenting, which was exactly what it is to me. So, like, we were kind of talking before the show, there's nowhere in the world that I can go and someone is going to ask me, so, and what are you? They're going to be like, she's Black. It doesn't matter where I go. But there are some people who get to walk around with a smidge bit of ambiguity, a little sazon, perhaps, a little harissa, perhaps, a little tagine, perhaps. I don't have that. I have Lowry's. I have Lowry's in Trini Green Seasoning everywhere I go. So when I say somebody is exotically presenting, I mean, I look at Kendrick Lamar's wife and she's racially ambiguous. That's not a thing. That's not a knock on her. I still want her to do well. I hope that her and their babies are well and all that other stuff. There's nothing I feel the need to apologize for if the listener felt offended. I would say I apologize, but then that would completely negate everything I just said. So I'm just going to say I didn't mean it with an intent to be malicious. She's racially ambiguous. She's exotic presenting to me. And I drew the parallel because both Kendrick Lamar and Donald Glover have both, through their works of art, tried to navigate the space where they not only examine Blackness, but both of them have advocated for their belief in Blackness. I think very strongly about Donald Glover's This Is America video. And I think very strongly about Kendrick Lamar's last two projects. This last one I felt was more introspective of him as a Black man. But then I drew the parallel where it's like Dr. Umar said, you know, he said, Dr. Umar, God bless him, when he talked about the fact that most of my critics, they're not married to Black women. I don't know about Kendrick Lamar's ancestry DNA, nor his wife, chosen life partner. All I can simply say is she's ambiguous. Okay,
right.
The Danny Lee of things.
It's, right. It's, but it, right. And it's an interesting conversation. So interesting that this is what the show that we're talking about is about.
That's exactly.
And that's kind of the whole thing about it that frustrated me as I reread the comment. I'm like, you're upset at me, but the whole episode that we just discussed is about this very thing. And the fact that we're not having this conversation is not going to push it any further. People need to continue to have these conversations in the same way that the gay, lesbian, trans community started to bring their conversations to the forefront that people weren't having, that they were having behind closed doors, the same way that we had to have conversations to get us to this point about being Black and, you know, of African descent or wherever you're from. Like, all of this stuff needs to continue to evolve. So we have to have these discussions.
And let's just be real. We're talking about two prominent men who really at the same time in space, both Kendrick and Donald, are occupying so much of the discussion. They have both have art, albeit through different mediums, out in the space that are driving conversation. And they both have lighter skinned partners. One is white, the other is to be determined, and that's okay.
Kendrick's fiance or life partner, she has a Black father and a biracial mother.
God bless her. So there we go. This is where we're at. And I think this comes from like kind of that larger discussion, because outside of Dwayne Wade and Barack Obama, there are not too many prominent people at the forefront of culture, of our culture or our zeitgeist, who are married to very visible, like without even blinking your eyes, what society would deem Black women. Goes back to our discussion about Atlanta and how it explored Blackness. Like, is it fair to assume someone isn't Black because of their skin tone? No, but that's part of the discussion. We haven't seen, or we don't see regularly, people of stature who are Black men with darker skin, Black women. Yeah. That's where I'm at.
I was just relieved the comments weren't about me or something I said. I felt a real sense of relief.
You didn't want to get canceled. Get canceled.
I saw the paragraph of text. I was like, uh-oh. And then I read through it. I'm like, all right. I don't think I said any of those things. So I think we're all good to keep recording this show.
You cannot cancel me. I am a house guest, and the way I will disappear off of all the social medias, you can't cancel me. Mm-mm.
Yeah, we're aware of your ability to disappear,
right,
Gabby, in your connections to top secret interviews, and you know all kinds of stuff that we are not privy to.
This podcast will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't worry about getting canceled. Again, Black people don't cancel other Black people. It's an impossibility. That's what Kendrick proved with his album, if anything. Also, Donald Glover proves that with casting Kevin Samuels. Maze, actually, you are the only one who's in danger of getting canceled. So just
exactly
cover your ass.
I got to tread very carefully, especially when we're talking about Atlanta and all of its complex themes.
Right. Yeah. And just... Maze, a point of advice for you. Avoid the grits question. If someone asks grits, sugar, or salt, just say, that's not my ministry. Just say, I'm a cream of wheat guy myself. Have no opinion, and you'll be just fine.
To be fair, I did get down on a good amount of cream of wheat as a child.
Yes! Are you West Indian, thanks, Mom. Maze? Are you West Indian? Are we family? I love
to the bone, baby!
I love that for you, Maze. I love that for you.
Do you identify as crypto curious? If you've thought about entering the world of cryptocurrency but felt a little overwhelmed, Coinbase makes learning to buy and sell simple. Cryptocurrency might feel like a secret exclusive club, but Coinbase believes that everyone, everywhere should be able to get in the door. Whether you've been trading for years or just getting started, Coinbase can help. Coinbase offers a trusted and easy-to-use platform to buy, sell, and spend cryptocurrency. They support the most popular digital currencies on the market and make them accessible to everyone. They offer portfolio management and protection, learning resources, and a mobile app so you can trade securely and monitor your crypto all in one place. Millions of people in over 100 countries trust Coinbase with their digital assets. Whether you're looking to diversify, just getting started, or searching for a better way to access crypto markets, start today with Coinbase. And for a limited time, new users can get $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up today at coinbase.com/BOMM. Sign up at coinbase.com/BOMM for $10 in free Bitcoin. This offers for a limited time only, so be sure to sign up today. That's coinbase.com/BOMM.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for your eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Maze, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise, but maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal, ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, DINGS, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
Wait, sidebar, what did y'all think of the Juneteenth Walmart and marketing the paper plates? It's the freedom for me.
It's the freedom for me.
Who made that?
First of all, the fact that that ice cream wasn't butter pecan or pecan,
right. Boom.
Some of
missed
us like
it.
To say, it's where they fucked up. Because yeah. Everyone knows that the adopted national Negro, aka nigga ice cream flavor, is butter pecan. They completely fucked up.
Yeah.
So they tried it. They tried it with the red velvet. I see where they were going, but right. You missed the mark. You missed the mark.
But someone did say that there's like a, I guess like a black owned ice cream company, and their most popular flavor is a red velvet cheesecake, and so they like feel that Walmart completely copied this brand's flavor.
But I'm gonna ask who was the core audience of that black owned brand, because white people be eating ice cream from black people. I'm saying,
right.
What?
Oh my god, we love ice cream.
Yes. Shout out to y'all and your genetics and not being lactose intolerant.
Man, I am lactose intolerant like a motherfucker.
Yeah. It feels great.
No dairy.
What a superpower.
I love dairy products.
You can drink whole milk, Mace.
I was practically raised on that stuff.
Wow, the superpower.
How do you think I got to be 6'6"? Not an accident, Jason.
White privilege
milk.
Is being able to have dairy whenever you want. Any time of day. That is white privilege amongst many
that
other
is,
things.
Yeah, I mean, it. I'm sure it is. I probably wouldn't put it in the top 10, but it's up there.
You better embrace it, my lactose king.
We're jealous. We're all jealous. I just want you to know that.
Yes.
I'll think of you guys.
We don't get sunburnt, though, so there's that. So
yeah, that's a nice trade-off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll take
all that. Right. So back to this episode. So the title of this episode was
Dahare.
So did anyone figure out what this was? What
yes,
is that? What does that mean?
It's about this 17th century French soldier, right? Who was known to be like this amazing soldier, but also there were rumors about this French soldier that he was a cannibalist. Cannibalist, is that right?
Cannibal.
Cannibal. Shit.
That he
Cannibal
engaged...
Burris.
That he engaged in cannibalism. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So that makes the entire episode make sense because, you know, the ladies are sitting.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it does. It does
entire
connect
episode.
It a
it connects some
more.
Things. Okay. So the yes. So the three ladies are sitting at the cafe. Candace, the main girl who is out there, you know, paid to pee, she sees Van across the way, and she goes to, you know, holler at Van, and Van is looking at her like, I have no idea who you are.
Who is this? And I do not know who you are.
And so they go on this mission with Van, and they pull up to a Parisian hood. I don't know where where they were at, but... The moment that they were
it looked
out
like
there,
Candyman.
Yeah, that's what
right.
She said. Yeah,
yeah.
And so a lot of people kept yelling out Tahare,
Tahare. Either way.
And so I was So thank you for that, because now that makes sense. It's like, oh, she's showing up, you know, to collect.
Yeah, that was like her gangster name. She had adopted a gangster name when she, you know, moved over there to Paris. And some gangster sensibilities as well. But the only thing was, like, she did all that for a hand?
Yeah.
Like, how much was that hand worth?
The backstory is where that hand came from. That's what I want to know.
No,
I
want to
know where I want to know where the hands were coming from.
Yeah,
The hand you clearly obtained through a complicated series of favors, which is... very French thing. I mean, I understand if you don't have familiarity with this, but when you're in France, you can trade goods and services for hands. You know, it's pretty common.
It's like a hand barter.
A hand-to-hand deal.
A hand-to-hand.
A handoff.
We're doing hand-to-hands today.
A handoff, yeah. How did they not taste that it was hand?
That thing looked beautifully fried.
What does a hand taste like? What do you mean?
I mean, you don't think
probably
that you
a bit gamey.
Yeah, you don't think you would be able to taste like what human flesh tastes like?
Was it deboned? Were there no bones in it?
Like he wasn't deboning it. That would be a whole situation.
Right.
He was like breaking
and that's
the
a
knuckles
lot of
down.
Cartilage.
If you took the bone out, it wouldn't hold the shape at all because the hand is really held together by the hand. Yeah,
I don't know if you've ever
tried to debone a drumstick. It doesn't go too well, B. You kind of need the bone in that situation. But I wanted to call attention to the fact that Candace, we've seen her before. I don't know if y'all remember the Champagne Poppy episode where they go to the party.
Yeah.
Got it.
She's the connect that gets Van in the car. That was also a Van solo episode, I believe.
It
so
was.
It's a return
pretty much
for Candace here.
Yeah, this was
and
the
then
Van Identity
I loved
part
two. The Van Identity. Yep, that's that. Yeah, she definitely woke up with amnesia and was trying to put her life back together. But I love the little banter from Zosha and Shanice. And they're like, is she going to carry that fucking baguette around like all day? Maybe it's a security baguette. If she loses it, she stops being French.
He said, she really ain't put this bread down once. And the other girl's like, I fucks with it now.
Yeah, I fucks with it now. That was the best. Now. It grows on you. You know?
Want a baguette now. I need a baguette. I need a baguette.
Hopefully a fresh one.
Yeah, not
you know,
one that's
not,
been...
Not a stale boy.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, no, I need months. That six-month stale baguette. You got to understand, I got to keep a baguette on me.
Go holler at Subway.
Okay.
Right.
No yeah. Jared.
Oh, God.
But yes, in terms of... like, I thought the hand was really nicely coated and fried. It had a real golden brown crisp to it.
It looked like panko.
It definitely looked like panko. Mm-hmm. They put the shroud over their head like they're eating the ortolan in succession or in billions. You know, that's to really lock in the flavor. That's so you don't want to lose any of the juices and the aromas that come off of the hand because it is a delicacy. So you want to enjoy it.
That's the only thing I would say about this that felt like... Now I feel like this is a TV trope. This, like... Like you were saying with the ortolan thing, they've done it on Billions. They did it on Succession. They're doing this. I mean, it felt like a more serious, semi-serious version of like the Beetlejuice dinner, you know? I feel like they wanted it to feel really fresh, but I kind of saw exactly where it was going. I was a little like, kind of let down by the fact that it was a hand, honestly.
I think it was lending to the surrealism and the absurdity of Van being in Europe and then ultimately ended up in Paris. And like you said, like kind of just leaving it all behind. Like I'm with you. I'm like, we've seen this plot device before, but I think they used it just to continue that absurdity.
I feel like, when they write the show, it feels like they do it in Mad Libs. And that's kind of how, like, that's when I get taken out of the show because I feel like this feels like a Mad Lib. Like,
that's funny.
You know, like.
I think this episode was a more extreme version of that than pretty much any other one this season. Like, this was literally like, what is the next craziest thing we can do?
Yeah. No, I feel
Let's
like.
Let's keep
that,
raising the stakes.
Yeah, I feel like they did that a little
what
bit in the
What white
Castle
actor
Club.
Can we get to. Stripped down to his undies, you know?
Exactly. And so,
I mean, the Cancel Club, that was more like, you know, that was a drug trip, right?
So I feel
like that was a little more cohesive in that sense.
Yeah. Right.
It starts off just completely ridiculous with her in that wig trying to do that accent. Shouts to Zazie Beetz. She tried her damnedest.
And that wig looks like that's the wig that she stole. And she got run it over.
Yeah.
So this made me think about like the previous episodes that had the ensemble and all of the erratic or kind of like we saw Van, Zazie Beetz's character, we saw Van kind of showing some signs that she was off, like,
absolutely,
the entire time, right? Like, the pushing the dude, the staff in the pool, the stealing things, the I'm just showing up, and the I'm going to kiss Earn in the hotel, even though we're not a thing or we may be a thing. I'm like, she has been erratic in subtle ways this entire season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we needed this episode. And that's why we needed the pretty emotional bench conversation at the end when she finally drops the act. So, B, I want to ask you about this because, you know, earlier on I said, I asked you in this season, you know, like, what's it like when mom gets to go on vacation, gets to wild out a little bit, and she needed this. So please take me inside the mind of Van on this situation.
And the thing is, Gabrielle is also a mother too, and we have conversations about motherhood a lot. And sometimes, like, the life as the primary parent, we're both, you know, Black single mothers. We're not with our partners, you know, our baby daddies, you know what I mean? And here we are, we have Van, who is confused as to who she is. She doesn't know who she is. She's, her whole identity is just being a mother and a provider and a daughter, a, you know, ex-girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, she has so many other things that she has so many responsibilities. But at the same time, it's like, but who are you, though? And honestly, I'm going to be real. I've been asked that question, like, after I had my son and I went back to work, people be like, oh, so what do you like to do for fun? I have no idea. I don't know what I like to do for fun, because my day consists of making sure that my son is good and making sure, you know, everybody's eating. And, you know, I'm the house manager, I'm a nurse, I'm a hairstylist. Like, I do so many things. I have so many titles as a mother under this mother umbrella that Bethany, I don't know who she is anymore. So having a whole crisis, I get it. Like, sometimes you just have a breaking point and you just want to, like, disappear, but you never get the opportunity to do that. I remember, again, Gabby, I know you remember this too. I think it was 2016. I was exhausted. I had, you know, I was a stay-at-home mom. I have a toddler. I'm running the household with, you know, my, at the time, my boyfriend, baby daddy. And I was so exhausted that I just wanted to take just a day to myself. And I told my dad how tired I was. So he was like, hey, I'm going to book you a hotel room on the strip. Pick a place and I'll pay for it so you can just have a break. And I picked a nice hotel out here called the Vidara. Beautiful, quiet, no casino. It's, you know, because I'm out here in Vegas. So I needed somewhere quiet, peaceful. And when I tell you, my boyfriend was really upset that I was leaving to take one day, not even 24 hours. Literally, you check into the hotel at 3 and you check out at 11. I didn't even get to have a peaceful hotel stay because it's like, you're a mom. You're supposed to be here doing X, Y, and Z. And it's like, but what about me? Like, if I'm struggling to, like, I'm not happy, why can't I just take a moment to clear my mind, get some rest, and just worry about myself for a second? Because if I don't do that, I'm not going to be a good mom. And so when Van is having this conversation on the bench and she's just like, yo, she was like, I could even feel that my daughter is looking at me like she knows that I'm not okay. She was like, I feel like a terrible mom. I feel like a shit mom. And I think all moms at some point in their motherhood lifetime have this feeling like, I could be doing better. I really suck at this. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know who I am. Do you feel that way, Gabby? Like, have you ever had those moments where I'm like, ugh, I am fucking this shit up?
Yeah, I do. And then that gets even more exacerbated by the fact that I get these things called orders. And orders are exactly as they sound. You're ordered to be somewhere and you have to be there. So, you know, not only do I face that in my normal day to day, you know, I face that when it's time to go to this training or, you know, they're like, hey, we're going to send you to Germany for 2 months to learn a new language, which everybody's like, that seems really cool, except for your baby's only 7 months old. Mm-hmm. Right. And you've been breastfeeding this entire time. So now you have to stop breastfeeding, go to another country for 2 months to learn this language that, you know, the military wants you to learn. and then come back and you miss so much. So you most definitely have those moments. And I think, like you said, that's why that bench scene kind of hit home, because there are a lot of times where I'm like, am I doing enough? But conversely, there are times where I'm like, I am doing too much. And Bethany knows that, like, I will call her and be like, and I tell my boyfriend this all the time. I tell my mom, I tell anyone who hear me, the most important thing to me in my life is my peace, because there's so much of my life that I cannot control. I cannot control when I walk outside of my house, whether I'm in uniform or not, how people look at me. I cannot control what happens with my daughter. She may have a great day at school. She may have a bad day at school. I have to show up. It doesn't matter. My soldiers may have an issue. I have to show up. So those times where I can show up for myself, I'm always going to take that. And the times where I can't show up for myself, I have some in the tank. I have some fuel. Okay. But there, I can't ever describe when it happens. I don't know how often it happens, but I know when I'm running on fumes and yeah. I know I'm tired of it. And when I get to that place, I need to do exactly like what you said. Like right now, I'm on leave until the middle of June. I took a whole month off of work. And I said, I don't want to do anything but sit on my couch, binge watch TV, and go where I want, when I want, however I want, because it's a lot. And you can just sort of feel like, before anything else, they're always going to be like, well, how's your daughter? Or how are you as a mom? Before anything else, before you show
before
up in the world.
Anything
yeah. else. And I noticed when I was going through the tweets about Atlanta and when Van showed up, I didn't see anything about from the perspective of like, well, where's Lottie? It's always like, well, how could she leave Lottie? How could she leave Lottie? And I'm like, well, where are the tweets that say, well, how could Earn leave Lottie? Where are the right. tweets that are like, who's watching? Like, how come Earn doesn't do this? It was like, as soon as Van showed up on our screens, it's like, that's when we're concerned about where Lottie is. And now we're concerned about why she's so far away from her kid. And now we're concerned about this child's welfare. Ask the damn pappy that. Ask Earn that. Because well, why does well, Earn see, get to pop up and go to Europe?
Right. So I was going to mention that, you know, obviously we get to the end of the episode. And Earn has a very... It's not interesting. It's not an interesting character arc at all in this season. And I just wonder how Donald Glover reconciled that in the writing process. Literally, he made no mistakes throughout the whole season. Like, everything he does is right. He's making sure Paperboy has his masters. He's looking for his phone. He's making sure all the shows are set up. Like, there's no conflict between his with his character at all in the season. He's telling Paperboy how to handle the Esco situation. Like, he's just the good guy who's just there to help his cousin out and go make some money for his kid and clean his act up. And it's just like, so he doesn't do nothing wrong anymore. Like, I thought that was interesting, you know? And then obviously Van is on the other end where everything she does is fucked up. Like literally right. every single action that she does is like foul. It's like, so like, again, this plays back into the black women, like thing with him. But I also understand the story that he was trying to tell with Van, which is like, a very needed story based off of the, you know, examples that you guys gave from your own lives. That bench conversation almost makes up for all the bullshit that he makes her do throughout the season, and explains her state of mind. And, you know, I guess she's like in this dissociative disorder yeah. that she's, right. you know, expressing. So I get it. And it's a very creative way to show something that's serious in life. But yeah, I thought it juxtaposed with Earn's kind of like goody two shoes thing was interesting.
Well, let's pocket that for a second, because I think that's definitely relevant, and I want to come back to it. But first, is it fair that they did 95% surreality and one scene of honest character work? Like, does it make up for it? I don't think it quite does.
No, that's what I was saying. Yeah, I agree. It doesn't.
Yeah. The French acid trip that she went on is essentially all a metaphor for like how she feels inside her head. Okay. Like I get it, because I enjoyed the episode. But the earn part that I want to concentrate on is we jumped into this third season. We have no idea how long it's been. Paperboy is instantly successful. Earn is instantly competent. Like, all of that has been fast-tracked. And this is one of the few, like, the Paperboy episode where he eats the Nepalese dream cake or space cake, that was his character episode. This was Van's character episode. We haven't, like, Earn hasn't even had a plot line, like, let alone show any nuance or, like, fuck up at all. Like, he hasn't had a story. So it's a very strange
season. That's what I'm saying. How could they go for a whole season without having anything happen?
Because there's another season in the fall.
There's another season coming. But, I mean, see the second episode when Earn wakes up. He's laying beside some chick he doesn't know, probably doesn't speak English or whatever. His battery dies. And I was thinking like, oh, shit, this is about to be chaotic when it comes to Earn. And then nothing happened.
There was no chaos. He was the train conductor the whole time. He's just sitting there like, up.
But I think as confusing as that is to us, it's equally confusing to Van. Because he's instantly become a success overnight. She's left at home with the kid. He's gone. And that adds to everything that she's experiencing that B and Gabby both spoke about so eloquently. Is like her identity is fucked. Like she's a mom and like that might be it. And so she's, you know, she's reckoning with that.
She no longer has Earn's failures to boost her own ego or to
she had the upper hand on him for most of the first two seasons.
Right.
She no longer has that as a way to comfort herself through her crutch.
It's no longer a crutch.
And I'm thinking like I wonder if Earn having kind of a subdued presence and an error free presence this season was a way to kind of make Van's story, that much more understandable, because it's like, here I am. Like, I've been on your ass for the last couple of years about providing, about getting your shit together. And now that your shit's together, now what else do I have to fall back on?
Woo!
That's very real. That's a very real thing that happens. It's like you have some moms who go through things like that, and they may have had a shitty partner. I know that my ex, I don't like to use the word husband, I'll say my ex legal partner.
There you go.
My ex legal partner. See, because here's the thing
is that declassified, Gabby?
No, it's very much declassified. But here's a pro tip for you guys and the listeners: in order to be in a marriage, you have to have both a wife and a husband. When there's no husband, then it's not a marriage. Therefore, it's an ex legal partner. Mm-hmm. So, So my ex legal partner, I know there are people who do that, right? Like, and rather than focus on where your own insecurities are, it can be very easy to be like, well, my baby daddy ain't shit. My ex husband ain't shit. And you put all that focus, and the guise is I'm doing all of that to make you a better person for our child. And I felt like that's kind of where her focus was, because she was so up in that. But that's not really, when that gets taken away, it's like, okay, now what?
Yeah, when he becomes shit,
you're right.
Now what do you do?
It's
tough.
You apparently get a really horrendous synthetic wig and you run around Paris. And you do a really, you know, shit take on Emilie, and you know, you star in the Van Identity.
Hey, hold it right there. I know this conversation is great. However, we will resume this conversation next week here on Showtime.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.